You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
That you are listening to right now.
Woo! Today we're going to be talking about the fourth serial of the 20th season of Doctor Who, Terminus, which consists of four episodes that aired from February 15th, 1983 to February 23rd, 1983.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring these episodes.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
Woo!
And you can check him out at matthewgolden.net.
And you looked that up beforehand and everything. Yeah. I'm so proud of you.
I'm getting better at this. Joining us today is a podcast host whose podcast is named after this very serial. Is it Snake Dance? No, the Terminus podcast. It's Nicole Mazza. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, I mean, Snake Dance would have been a good name too, to be fair, but people might have thought I needed to do some, like, sort of, you know, dancing, and that would be awkward. So
I gotta ask you, before we even dive into all of this, why did you pick Terminus to be your podcast name?
It's so funny. One thing I didn't kind of figure when I picked the name was that everybody was going to think, like, oh, this must be your favorite story or a story you really love or whatever. I mean, I like it. I don't hate it. But honestly, you know, like, picking a podcast name is like trying to name a band or something, or a roller derby name. You know, you want something kind of fun that fits. And Terminus is actually an older name for Atlanta. And so I was like, well, that's kind of a Doctor Who connection, because there's a story called Terminus, and I'm in Atlanta, and that was called Terminus. And of course, everyone, I think, thinks I'm a Walking Dead podcast. So, you know, there's that. But yeah, that was my thinking at the time. I thought a lot about it, but I didn't think much of it. But now I just go on lots of podcasts and talk about Terminus. I even did in April. I've done it twice this year.
Nice. So you're definitely prepared, right? You just have all of your pre-planned, just repeat everything.
Right. I think I know the story well enough. And I mean, I even watched it on 2x speed when I watched it back yesterday and today, which is always funny, by the way, if you ever do that. Especially like the theme song. It's like, and I'm just like, this is the greatest thing ever. So if you're ever bored, watch it on 2x speed.
And honestly, this serial has a bit of a slower pace, I feel
it
like.
Does.
So
does it?
Yeah, this will help it pick up. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, but it's definitely okay. There's a lot of, like, long walking.
I just
down
feel like it keeps introducing stuff, new things constantly.
So it's not your favorite serial. Is it your favorite serial this season?
Actually, for me, it's definitely Enlightenment. Enlightenment is my favorite Fifth Doctor story.
You're going to have to change your podcast now.
I know. But then again, much like the Snake Dance with Enlightenment, people come to me and be like, hey, tell me how to do this thing in my love life or something. And I'll be like, I can't help you. Or I could just give some random Buddhist phrases or something just to try to help. But yeah. It'd be sad.
So other than the name of your podcast, how have you been?
Pretty good. Pretty good. It's definitely a weird time in the world. And as I found when I rewatched it, both in April and now, rewatching the story during the pandemic is a little extra. It gives it a new dimension. So, but yeah, mostly pretty good.
Yeah, it's been a weirdly relevant period of Doctor Who, because we've had a couple of plague episodes that have happened since, you know,
the plague,
all the COVID stuff is, yeah,
2020 and the year that it's been,
right?
From like the Visitation on, it's just been like plague and quarantine and yeah.
I literally can't stop thinking about Steve Conway tweeted, like, I don't remember what episode it was, but it was some like an episode that we had recorded in February and like got released in March. And he was like, it was weird listening to the two of you and being like, oh, they don't know.
Oh.
Now every podcast starts with like, how you doing? Oh, you know, bad.
2020.
Real bad.
Getting through. I feel that.
This year is just an entire mood. Are we ready to talk about Doctor Who?
I think so.
Then let's do it. So let's dive right into episode one, which I have called The Ship of Skulls.
All right. That sounds like a Terry Nation title.
Yeah.
Mine is a throwback to the 90s, and it's Call Me Mr. Raider, Call Me Mr. Wrong. That might go over your head because you're younger than me, but it's from a song, a techno song. Yeah, because it kept saying, Raider, come in, Raider, Raider, Raider. And I was just like, call me Mr. Raider, call me Mr. Wrong. Yeah.
I have not heard that song.
Yeah, it's a cheesy dance song from the 90s.
The first thing we get in this episode is Turlo talking to the Black Guardian.
I was really mad because I was like, I thought it cracked.
Yeah, his little
class thing. I thought it cracked and he was fine.
Nope.
It got fixed.
We should be so lucky.
I do always like the idea that there's stuff behind the roundels, though.
Oh, yeah, because the Black Guardian tells him to open the roundel and fuss around with some stuff. Do some sabotage.
That's like, they're always occasionally where it's like, oh yeah, those are surprise cabinets.
Like when, was it Riversong put the wine or whatever behind one of them?
I think the first time maybe not the first time, but we definitely saw in the first Fifth Doctor serial, there was stuff behind the roundel as well.
I think, like, wasn't there like a first aid kit in the First Doctor?
So there's a first aid kit in the first Fifth Doctor serial.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
When he's all in the wheelchair and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Going a bit nuts.
We've probably seen behind a roundel before, but I don't remember. I know for sure that we definitely seen it at the beginning of the season. But yeah, that's always fun. And then he gets caught. Well, he almost gets caught by Tegan.
I like Tegan for how much she does not give a shit about Turlo.
Right.
She doesn't trust him an inch, and she is correct.
She's like, who are you talking to? And he says, oh, I was singing. Which is the weirdest. He could have just said I was talking to myself, but he says he was singing. And he has a bad voice.
God, and then he just proceeds to be the most arrogant dickhead that you've ever met in your whole life. I'm trying to remember anything particular he said, but all I can remember is just rolling my eyes at everything.
He says, you look so sweet when you're angry.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, no. I mean, she should have totally punched him.
Infuriating. He's also very like, well, you should try not being emotional and being logical like me, and then you wouldn't hate me so much. And it's like, no, it's completely logical to hate you. You're the worst.
I do think this is not bad, though. Like,
it's intentional.
Yeah.
I don't think you're supposed to like him. I think you're supposed to want to punch him.
Yeah.
Right?
It's not like what they did to Adric. This is the direction they want to go with this character instead of just taking your character and then messing him up.
And he's also just like a terrible assassin. The Black Guardian like picked the wrong guy. I mean, this guy he's pretty useless. I mean, he does grow on you, but
I have been saying this. I think later in, like, I think one of the last episodes, like, after, like, you know, four episodes of the Black Guardian be like, kill the Doctor, and Turlo being like, okay, in a minute, Mom!
Yeah.
After four episodes like that, the Black Guardian says, you've been a terrible investment of my time. And I've been like, yeah, I don't know, you just picked a random-ass kid to murder the Doctor. Why not pick, I don't know, an assassin?
That's a good question.
There are people who, like, train to do that. Get one of them. You just picked a random dude, and he sucks.
And honestly, his entire plotline, this whole serial, is kind of pointless. He doesn't really... It's just him and Tegan and stuck in grates, like, the whole episode. Stuck in the walls and stuff. I don't even think Turlo gets onto Terminus, does he?
Yeah, they're on the ship through that's when they're going through, like, under the grating and stuff. That's all on Terminus. They just don't ever meet up with the Doctor until the end.
They just don't really do much the whole serial, except the Black Guardian tunes in every once in a while and goes, hey, did you kill the Doctor yet? Did you kill the Doctor yet?
By the way, speaking of Adric, that's whose room Turlo gets.
I know.
Which seems like they should have more rooms.
Which has some Warrior's Gate stuff in there, but it's like the same writer, Steve Gallagher. So he's like, let me put some of my props in there.
There's a whole bunch of props, too. There's the visitation robot mask. There's the Kinda necklace thing.
Is the implication that Adric has just been kind of stealing things?
I hope so.
It would make it more interesting. So, I mean, why not?
I mean, that's how he started the show, right? Just trying to steal some fruit.
Oh, he was trying to get good at it.
I mean, he's definitely supposed to be the, like, what, Oliver Twist or whatever character, so thieving is his thing, I guess.
Maybe he was gonna try to sell it all off or something.
Tegan drops Turlo off at Adric's room and then goes to Nyssa's room to bitch about Turlo, which is totally fair and justified.
And Nyssa's doing science in her room because she's awesome.
Yes. Also, we don't see Tegan's room at all.
No, they share a room.
I was going to say, we do. It's the same room.
Wink.
Yeah, it's why I ship them. There's so many rooms on the TARDIS, but they share a room.
Yeah, they're definitely a couple, right? And it's been made canon recently, so.
Yeah, I cheered when that happened because I've been saying that for years. And, you know, I'd even say that at, like, Hulanta or something. And, like, some of the geek boys would, like, clutch their pearls like, oh, no. And I was just like, oh, totally. They're totally together. You know, and people were like, no, it's just like, you know, maybe they just feel safer together because the TARDIS is so big. And I'm like, no, they're together.
Maybe they're just really good friends. They're just gals being pals.
Gal pals.
Gals being pals in love, right? That's
right. Yeah, basically Nyssa's just making love potions in there to try to get Tegan.
Well, if she's still trying to get Tegan, the thing she does by the end of this serial is not going to help.
I thought you were going to say getting undressed. I mean, that might help.
Oh, yeah, that might help. But so while they're doing science in their bedrooms, wink. Turlo talks to the Black Guardian again and fusses with the console, gets under there and starts messing with stuff. This causes Tegan to run into a special effect that I was like, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. It happens and you're like, what is that meant to represent?
She just walks down a hallway and then there's like some glowing pixels and she's like, ah, and then runs away. And I was like, all right.
That must be bad.
But she bumps into the Doctor and it's like, the Doctor doesn't show up into this serial until, like,
way late. Yeah, when he showed up, I was like, oh, yeah, that guy. He's in this show.
He was taking a nap or something.
Then he sort of, like, runs around and, like, figures stuff out. And he figures out that he realizes that the outside dimensions are breaking into the inside dimensions. That's just sort of meshing a bit.
Seems bad.
Nyssa gets trapped in her room and a skull door appears. And it's really cool looking.
Because she's a goth.
Just matches the decor.
The design of these skulls is so bizarre. Well, it's not bizarre. It's just not, it's not something you, I guess, that I would think to see on like a futuristic ship.
Well, it is a leper ship. We will learn.
It just looks like graffiti, though, it does. To me.
But still, like, if you went to a leper ship, which would suck, but, I mean, if you were there, would you really want skulls everywhere? I mean, it's like, dude, we're rubbing it in. You're gonna die.
Well, everyone that sort of handles them are very, like, callous and don't care, so.
I can also imagine that it's something of, like a toxic waste symbol. Like, right. A warning sign.
Yeah.
Warning. Lepers.
Yeah.
So the Doctor's watching this on the monitor and tells Nyssa, because the door opens, and he tells her to run through the door, because if she stays in there, things are going to be bad and explode or whatnot. So she runs through the door, because he's like, I don't know what's on the other side, but there's a better chance of her surviving than if she stayed in here, and definitely explodes. So she goes through it, and then the door starts to close again, so the Doctor rushes in and picks up a chair and throws it expertly into the crack between the door.
So incredibly smooth.
Yeah, the door would totally crush that chair. I mean, it was like the saddest chair. I'm like, oh, right, super chair.
I could be wrong, but that footage looked like it was possibly reversed.
Yeah, it does look weird.
Like they stuck the chair in there and they pulled it out and reversed it. So then the doctor goes through and looks around a bit, finds a burnt book.
That burnt book is infuriating.
I don't think they do anything because with it.
I think it's Nissa's book. I think she was doing her calculations in it and she was carried it through to the other side.
That makes sense.
That does make sense. Because really, it was driving me crazy because everybody kind of like picked it up or noted it. But they were just like, a book. And then walked away. And I was like, yes.
That makes sense. Interact with it. Book. I think it's partially there to be, because I mean, this is like a pretty
featureless
hallway other than the skulls and stuff. But like, I think it's supposed to be somewhat of a marker. Storytelling wise, not like specifically, like we're putting this here to mark it. The doctor goes through, sort of wanders off. Tegan goes through, sort of wanders around, and then Turlo goes through and the door shuts and disappears.
I don't know where the chair went, but you know, they could have used that to sit down on and rest. But
yeah, there's no good places to sit on this ship. So the doctor is going around looking for Nissa. And while he's looking around, a ship docks onto this ship. Then the doctor finds Nissa and she's like hiding, kind of.
I mean, like a 2-year-old might hide.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, if I squat down really low and cover my ears, no one will see me.
It was a little bizarre. And that was what I'm talking about, this episode having a bit of a slow pace. He very slowly walks around, then he stops and he looks down and the camera slowly zooms in on him. And then it cuts to Nissa holding that pose for a while.
We knew she was there. That wasn't a reveal.
Maybe they were running under time and they were just like, okay, just walk really slow.
And so we find out who was on the ship that docked onto this ship. And their name is Carrie and I want to say Ulver.
Oh, man.
Ulver. They blast their way into the ship.
They look amazing.
I love that their helmets are perfect for their 80s hair. That's like my favorite thing. And also like Carrie or Carrie, I always forget. Anyway, that's Lisa Goddard, who was actually Colin Baker's ex-wife.
Oh.
She even dated Fraser Hines for a little while. So that's something weird. And apparently, and I just learned this today. Today I learned, I happened to be looking at trivia about the episode. Apparently she was going to be named Yoni originally.
Yes, I read
yes.
that.
Yes. And Eric Sayward was like, that kind of means a vulva. I think it would have been funny had Eric just been like, I'm not going to say anything. Just let her be Yoni.
No one told Chris Chibnall not to use Vore.
I know. I know, right?
Oh, and someone should have.
So many people Googled that and learned something new in their lives.
But yes, so they have giant 80s hair, and then they have even bigger, gigantic helmets.
They're so cool.
Giant see-through helmets. They're not even like
round.
They're round. They're like weirdly clamshell looking.
Yeah, and they have to like turn it to take it off, which is hilarious. Yeah, apparently they would fog up while they were filming too.
The outfit below the helmet is also gorgeous.
They got that like big, long, white, swishy cape. It looks to me very She-Ra.
Oh yeah, I could totally see that. I mean, it is 80s, so...
Yeah.
I dig this aesthetic so much. Another cool thing pops up. There's a robot.
Oh, God. The robot.
The robot is one of those things that is like, this episode introduces a lot. And like, there's this robot, but it's there and it's in like one other scene. It's just a robot.
It does the sterilization.
And it does catch Nissa, but I mean, she's like, oh, Ulver, help me. And I'm like, you could probably pull away from that thing.
It's got the world's tiniest clamp hand.
I know. It's so cute. Like, that would not pick a little stuffed animal out of the machine, you know, to pick the animal. It just wouldn't work. Maybe that was its old job, and now it's a sterilizing robot.
I love it. It's got a bunch of different arms, right? It's got like...
Yeah, it's kind of, I remember being kind of like a clunky dude.
I like any robot that doesn't look humanoid, so that always makes me very happy. So the pirates go around and they're confused. The pirates are the people with the helmets. They're pirates. They've come to steal stuff, but then they're confused because they think they might be on the wrong ship because there's no one around. It's on automatic, but there's still an atmosphere and they're very confused about what's going on. Then they find the doctor and Nyssa and point some guns at them. The pirates think that they are after the same cargo they're after, and there's a whole confusion about it. Meanwhile, Tegan keeps hearing what she thinks is Nyssa yelling, "Help me," but I suppose that's one of the lepers?
Yeah, because they're in those little, they're almost like prison cells, but they're, I guess that's just where they put them in the meantime or something.
And Tegan goes to one of them and opens the door, and then just a bunch of arms come out and start grabbing her. Like a horror movie.
Yeah, apparently, I think when they were filming, they accidentally pulled Janet Fielding's top down. Because, you know, she has that sort of like, she doesn't have straps. It's a, what do they call that? When it's just like a, it just goes around your chest.
Halter top.
Halter top, yeah. And so they accidentally pulled it down. And of course, they were accidentally grabbing her boobs and stuff. And so it probably wasn't very fun for her.
Oh my goodness.
It does lead me to wonder. She got completely felt up by the Lazars and didn't get sick. But Nyssa just randomly got sick. Like, maybe Nyssa has, like, a worse immune system or something. Kind of like the whole, like, you know, like when the English settlers came over to America and they got all the Native Americans ill because they weren't familiar with, their bodies weren't familiar with that. The issues with, like, smallpox and stuff. But I don't know. It was very weird because I don't think anyone touches Nyssa before she gets ill.
I think you're right.
Tegan is from Australia, and they're tough.
Yeah, they've got like the craziest animals and all kind of stuff. Yeah, that makes sense.
So the ship that has docked with this ship leaves, and just they hear it.
Abandons them.
They're like, "Oh, nope, I'm out of here."
And Kari's like, "That's rude," and she wants to commandeer the TARDIS, and she's like, "Do it or else." And the doctor's like, "No, that's rude. Maybe just ask." And he basically talks to them. He's like, "We're in the same sort of situation here. So I will help you if you ask me, if you put your guns down and stop being rude.
If you ask nicely.
If you give me some makeup tips, I will totally help you."
And to be fair to them, they both go, "Yeah, okay," and put their guns down. So there's an announcement made, a message from Terminus. And it says, "Clear the area or get sterilized." And all of the doors open. And Oliver is like, "Terminus, oh no, we got to get out." And he runs away.
He goes very over the top very quickly.
He sure does.
That's why I have to use him at the beginning of my podcast opening. Because he's just so funny. That's my favorite part.
The sick people start piling out of the doors. Turlo and Tegan go under this grate on the floor, and then Oliver yells that they're on a leper ship, and they're all going to die! So good.
I wonder how many takes that was, or if he just, like, just fully went into it 120%.
That is a one and done.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is the end of episode one.
Woo!
And now we are into episode two, which I have titled, "That's Just Great."
Oh, Jesus.
Wow. I just called it Grandmaster Hydromel. Again, a music reference.
That one I get. So, it's only because of Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, that makes sense.
Edgar Wright has expanded my music knowledge a little bit. So then the ship that they're on docks on Terminus, which are the big... this big complex thing. They dock there. That's where they take the lepers, I suppose. And then the doctor stops Kari from just straight up murdering all these lepers. Or they call them Lazars? Is that right?
Yeah, because it's Lazar disease.
Is that based on, like, Lazarus, I guess?
I believe so. I mean, a lot of the stuff, obviously Lazarus isn't this, but a lot of the stuff in the episode is very Norse. Like, the Vanir characters all kind of have these kind of Scandinavian-ish names. And the Vanir were actually, like, basically, like, gods of, like, ancient Norse gods that were associated with things like health and stuff, like Freya and Freyr. And they were also the keepers of sacred mead, which I think, like, would heal people and stuff. So I think that's what the writer was going for. Because even the Garm was, like, the dog that guarded the entrance of hell. where the dead were. So I think that's what the writer was trying to be like, hey, man, I'm going to put a lot of Norse legends in here, you know. But I don't know what the Lazarus, like, it must be Lazarus, but why, they're not coming back from the dead. So, I mean, they're kind of like zombies, but.
I forgot about the, I watched the little documentary and they talk about the Garm being like the dog that guards the underworld. That's really neat. I like all that stuff. I loved Warrior's Gate, so I was excited to watch this one. This one's not as good as Warrior's Gate. But I feel like the script is pretty good, and I feel like some of the execution may be a little weak. And I also feel like maybe the stuff with some of the stuff was kind of like, we gotta shove this stuff in here sort of thing. Like, honestly, the Team TARDIS stuff is less interesting than, like, the mythology stuff that's going on here, the sort of, like, world building.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot of great ideas. As you said, I just don't think the execution is very good. But it's weird, it like grows on me more as I watch it more, because I'm like, oh, I can see what you're trying to do. It's just like, I don't know if it was the directing, because they had, I know they had Mary Ridge, who mostly did Blake 7. I think this was her only Doctor Who story. But yeah, it just doesn't flow right. Like, it's close, but it's not quite there.
There's definitely a mood to it that I like. It's definitely sort of, it feels darker and moodier. I don't know.
Especially nowadays.
That's true. My next note says, Turlo and Tegan are stuck in the grates. This is a whole thing.
It's a whole thing for the rest of the serial, I think.
Definitely, they are stuck in the grates for the rest of this episode, for sure. I think they get out the end, but they don't really go anywhere the next episode.
Yeah, I think Mark Strickson said, like, his main memory of this story is, like, basically Janet Fielding's butt. You know, because he's just, like, behind her all the time, crawling through grates and crawling. I bet their backs were, like, really not in good shape after this.
It's like going to the City Museum.
I've heard two different things about this particular plot line. One is that it's sort of like a metaphor. All of the groups of people in this thing are sort of stuck in their positions and there's no way out of it. And then they sort of, like, have to get out of it at the end. Like, they feel like there's no way out, you know? Everybody's sort of stuck in their roles. So they're, like, stuck in the grates. And the Vanir is stuck doing this slave labor stuff. The Garm is stuck doing what he's doing because of that control box. All that sort of stuff. But I've also heard, this is just a way to keep Turlo out of the plot so he doesn't kill the Doctor.
And get Nyssa naked. Well, not all the way naked, but yeah, there's certainly some upskirt shots in this that I'm like, okay, I see. Yeah,
that scene when she takes her skirt off is so weird too, because she's just like, I'm too hot. And like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I get when you have a fever sometimes you're just like, I just want to get undressed, but not if I'm walking around some ship somewhere, you know. It just, I mean, thankfully she has like a slip and everything on, but yeah, that was something.
From what I heard about that, the writer didn't realize that she had changed outfits.
Oh.
So was expecting the big Victorian thing. And he wrote, like, she couldn't breathe, so she takes off this big, you know, thing. And, like, she would still have clothes on underneath. Not like she's just stripping down to her underwear. And then, like, she could leave it behind as a clue for the Doctor to pick up on. But then when they got to filming it, they were like, this doesn't work. So she just takes her skirt off. And then, like, they could have put a jacket on her.
It occurs to me that this also happens, this isn't a spoiler, but in the Five Doctors, because, like, Sarah Jane, like, takes off bits of clothing throughout the story. Like, she starts with, like, a bigger jacket and a little jacket, and she's, like, periodically, like, disrobing throughout the story. So maybe that's a theme of this season.
That sounds like something a bunch of male writers did.
Or lesbian, you know, you never know.
That's true. But Nyssa starts to seem sick, and she's wandering away, and then she finds Ulver hiding, much in the same way she was hiding.
Right.
And she brings him back to everyone and says, like, the reason he freaked out is because his sister died on Terminus. And everyone dies on Terminus. And there's nothing you can do about it. Because, like, it's owned by this large company. They make all this money. And there's no way you can take down the system. And then that's when the Doctor says...
I wonder what that's like.
Yeah. I definitely feel like this is somewhat commentary on like healthcare and capitalism a bit.
Yeah.
I could see it being that. The doctor is looking up stuff about Terminus on the computers, and he thinks that it's very odd that this place is at the direct center of the known universe.
Which I find funny that he would know just by looking, but I mean, that wasn't a very good map. Like, it wouldn't be like, oh yeah, that's totally right at the center of the universe. Because there's that pizza place, like, right over there, and that's always, you know, like, how do you know? There's no, like...
The original pizza planet.
The original pizza planet, yes.
My notes also say, Turlo gets another check-in with the Black Guardian. This is a whole thing.
It's too bad he doesn't have signal. That would be more real to life, but I guess they didn't know about cell phones yet. But, like, oh, God, I can't. Or be like, you know, how you do when you are on a call and you don't want to take it and you're like, I can't hear you. Sorry.
Sorry in the grates.
Right.
So Tegan and Turlo are hiding in the grates and they see the first, did you say they're called veneers? Is that right?
Veneer, yeah.
They have a wooden veneer. They look like wooden skeletons. They're these guards, and I thought they were just creatures for a second, but they lift up their little helmet, and there are people in it.
I like the design of that, but they said that you couldn't hear the actors when they were talking, and that's why they flipped their helmet up every time they talk. But between lifting their helmets and, like, the space between their, you know, bits of armor, I'm like, they're not really being protected. It's like the people that pull their mask down to talk, you know? It's like, dude, you need to keep it on.
You can't hear them when they talk, but you can certainly hear them when they move.
Oh, yeah.
It's just plastic rubbing into plastic.
They cannot sneak up on you. It's just like clunk, 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 clunk.
Clatter, 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 clatter. They're so loud.
That must have sucked for the sound design people on that episode. Like, oh my God.
I don't think there's been as loud of a design choice since that great floor in Horns of Nymon.
Oh my God, yes.
How do designers not think about that?
Especially for television. I mean, if they've not worked in television, I could see maybe they didn't think that out. But if they're working for the BBC, they should know better.
They should. Stop making loud things. So then we see another one of these bone guys, these bone daddies. And his name is Boar. He's got a fantastic mustache.
He's pretty fun, too. I think he's got a great little personality.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think out of all of the veneers, he's my favorite.
Yeah.
He checks a scanner and notices that the levels of something are way off. And he's like, I gotta go check this out. And he crosses like a, what is clearly like a demarcation thing, like a border. And he goes across it. And then there's another bone guard named Valgard who runs up and stops right at it and goes, what are you doing? You can't go in there. That's the forbidden zone.
You got very excited.
The floor is made of lava. Come on.
He's like, I gotta check because the levels are way bad. Gotta go see what's going on. So Valgard goes to tell this to their, I guess, their leader, who is a vampire.
Yes, he looks just like the State of Decay guys, doesn't he?
He sure does. He's got the pale face and the dark eyes. And
the red around his eyes. And yeah, I was like, wait, is this a crossover with State of Decay? And that was when I was last on, so it is. It's like a crossover. It all comes around.
I see why you're on these episodes.
For that good eye makeup.
Yes.
I'm not 100% how you pronounce his name. It's spelled E-I-R-A-K.
I think they say Iraq. Iraq? Iraq? I can't remember. It's supposed to be like Eric, but I think they say Iraq. I don't remember now. I've seen this story a lot of times, but he's so boring that I just sort of like mentally check out when he's on the screen. I mean, I feel like he's definitely like a theater actor, like really pushing it, like, whoa, I'm super tough, whoa, you know, like that. But he's also kind of boring at the same time. So
his whole deal is that he's like callous and doesn't care. He's like the leader who doesn't give a shit. He's only in it for like himself, sort of thing. Because Valgard's like, yeah, Valgard's like, Boar just walked into the Forbidden Zone. What are we gonna do about it? And Irak's like, I don't care.
More hydromel for us?
Because the hydromel is what sort of powers them. I mean, it doesn't power them. They keeps them from being sick, I guess.
Which I don't know how, like, putting it in your suit though. Like, I don't know. I mean, that would be great for a rave, you know, like having it in your suit. But like, how does it get ingested? Or I don't know. It's very strange.
Maybe it just goes right into your chest. I don't know. Because later there's a scene where one of the bone guys, his name is Sigurd, gets one of them and shoves it into his thing. And he goes, ah, the bittersweet taste of life. Like he's in a coffee commercial or something.
Folgers Hydromel.
For the longest time, I thought they were saying the Hydromole. And I was like expecting some creature to show up. But then I was like, oh no, it's this goo they put in them.
That would be amazing. Especially if they were sticking like moles in their gear. But that would be really loud. That would be super loud.
And also like at that scene is when there's a scene where Valgar complains to this guy about Irak being a dick. And how the only reason he has power is because he's sort of in control of the Hydromel. He sort of dishes it out and is the boss of that. Meanwhile, Nyssa has gotten sick. And she tells Alvar that she's ill. And then that's when she takes off her skirt for reasons unknown. And then that's when the robot shows up and takes Nyssa. And Alvar just stands there and lets it happen.
He's kind of like, no.
He doesn't even do that, really. He just sort of like looks away like, I can't help because she's sick and I don't want to get it. It's a real douchebag. But he sort of redeems himself, I guess. But at this moment, not cool. Dude. But Nyssa is brought to Valgard, and she's like, what's your deal? And he's like, you talk too much.
You're not supposed to talk. What are you, a woman with opinions?
He says that he's a baggage handler, that they take the Lazars and pass them on to the next thing, which is the Garm. We'll see what the Garm is in a little bit. Then there's like a pointless fight scene that is the slowest thing I've ever seen. She's like, I cut my finger. Will you look at it? And he's like, all right. And then she just slowly shoves his chin.
It's so slow.
It's the worst choreography I've ever seen. Nyssa slowly shoves Valgard, runs away, and then gets immediately caught by, I believe, Sigurd.
Which I just realized that fight scene seems slow to me again. And I was watching it on 2x speed. So...
That tells you just how slow it was. Though I could maybe see that technique working because he would just be like, what are you doing? Oh! Oh!
He's probably not used to them fighting back or anything, so it probably startled him.
It would definitely startle me if someone slowly started shoving my chin. But they quickly restrain her and take her down the elevator to take her to the Garm. And this is when the doctor finds the skirt, which is why she had to take it off. So he could sort of follow the trail of Nyssa. He finds her skirt and a trail of blood. And then there's another scene that of establishing that Irak is just real big jerk. He wants the Garm to collect Boar's body because he just assumes that Boar went into the Forbidden Zone and died. And he's like, go make sure the Garm gets his body. Not because he's worried about, like, that he wants, you know, for Boar's, like, a funeral or whatever. He just doesn't want to waste his armor. So that's real rude.
He is not nice.
And then so Valgard calls the Garm and relays this order to him. And the Garm looks like Splinter.
He's, like, cuddly. Like, I want to snuggle him. He is just adorable. I like the way he sort of shuffles. I mean, that poor actor, he had a horrible costume. But, I mean, as far as, like, it was very hot.
Right. I think it's a really cool-looking costume.
I have to imagine, though, that, like, the people who worked in, like, costuming and props read the script and they had to be like, pick one.
You are wrong.
Really?
The script, it was just in the shadows and you saw its eyes. That was it.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, when he saw it, he was like, what? So, why did they make it a giant wolf? It's supposed to be all creepy and in the shadows and stuff. Because I was like, I was very specifically trying to make it cheaper to film.
Well, I know, like, at least with Andrew Cartmell's era with the Seventh Doctor, one of his complaints was the lighting. Like, you couldn't adjust the lighting. Everything was super bright in the BBC studios. And so he would always say, God, I wish we could make it darker. And I wonder if even back then that was still an issue where they didn't have any dark places to put him.
Though, to be fair, this is a pretty dark serial.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder if they No, they wouldn't have been able to grade it afterward, I don't think.
But I'm glad that they did it, because he looks cool.
He's snuggly.
He is. And he's not a bad guy.
No, he's just being controlled.
Everybody here is just stuck in a boring job. That's what a bad job that they can't get out of. So the doctor and Kari hear Tegan and Turlough sort of in their grates, but they can't do anything because they have to run away because the sterilization is happening and there's gas being poured in. So they leave the ship and get into the Terminus complex thing. Nyssa, meanwhile, is put in a cell with other Lazars, lepers, so that she can get some exposition from them. And then the doctor and Kari are sort of wandering around looking at things. And there's this, I really like this shot. It starts on the doctor and Kari, and the camera leaves Kari as the doctor goes to look at stuff and he's talking to her. And he says something to her and she's replying and she just stops mid-sentence, like very abruptly.
And he's like, oh God. I love that face he makes. It's like, oh, not again.
And then he turns around and we see that Valgard has his staff. Which, by the way, they have staffs. I don't know if we mentioned that. And he's choking her with it.
You know, that whole, like, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. That's what it is.
Another weird sort of camera angle thing, I think. They fix it in the recap in the next episode. But it's, like, slightly unclear what he's doing here. And this cliffhanger, he's like, her I've, like, you know, knocked out. But you I'm going to kill. And he goes up to him with the staff. And it looks like he's about to hit him in the head with the staff. And he just throws the staff away and chokes him.
He's not actually going to hit him in the head. He's throwing it down so that he can choke him.
Right. But like in the cliffhanger version, it's a different camera angle. So it looks like he's coming at him. But when they do the recap in the next episode, it's from a completely different angle. And it does look more like he's just throwing it aside.
Oh.
I think he was just going in for a hug.
That's just how they hug here.
What I don't understand about this cliffhanger is that like, he doesn't know what's going on at all.
Valgard.
And he's just like, you I'm gonna kill. I was like, why? That's a weird choice that you made just now based on no information.
It's especially weird considering what happens with this character is that, spoilers, he's gonna become their leader. And he's making these terrible decisions based on nothing?
I mean, he's an ex-pirate, like, as well. And he's, I guess a criminal. I guess that's what they're trying to say. But yeah, there's no reason he was like, I'm going to kill you. I mean, he could incapacitate him, but...
And it
just
wouldn't
need a cliffhanger.
Bother me so much. Like, fine, he found, like, you know, intruders on the ship, and he's like, I'll kill you now. Except that he very specifically didn't kill one of them, and was like, you I'm going to kill. Just don't like your celery.
I'm hungry. I'm here. Give me your celery.
She's got good fashion. You've got vegetable fashion.
That infuriates me.
But that's the end of episode 2. And we are now into episode 3, which I have just called The Forbidden Zone.
I have 2 potential episode titles. One was Garmy Bear. Because I'm like, oh, he's a Garmy Bear. And then the other one is just the quote, a burden shared is a... something or rather.
See, I didn't know that phrase until they mangled it in Time Flight. They swap it around. And I was unaware of the phrase to begin with, which is, it's a burden shared is a burden halved.
I think it's used more in England than it is in America.
And in Time Flight, he says a burden shared is a burden doubled.
They are talking about that story, right?
That story is definitely a burden.
Yes.
For sure. But I had to call this episode The Forbidden Zone because they mentioned The Forbidden Zone, and it's also a movie I enjoy because of Danny Elfman. But I like Garmy Bear a lot better.
That's what I want to call him all the time.
He's adorable. I would buy a Garmy Bear.
I would too. They need a Garmy Bear toy.
And not like one of those like figures. It's got to be like
plush. It's
got to
be stuffed.
Yeah,
a plush.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. Ooh, I wonder if his eyes would light up though. Ooh, maybe if you squeeze him. Yeah, his eyes would light up. Oh, I want this now.
Doctor Who marketing, make it happen.
Yeah, go back in time, make this happen. And yeah. Actually, no, they're re-releasing old toys. Like, they even did a Gel Guard toy. Do you remember the Gel Guard from the Three Doctors? A little, like, warbly, like, I don't know what you would even call them. They're just like mountains of bubbles. And they kind of walk around and go like...
The pussy boil looking things. Yeah.
There's a toy of that.
Why?
I think it's the Three Doctors set, but it's still... Because it also has Omega. But I mean, if there's a gel guard toy, there needs to be a Garm.
I should. Like, it's a much nicer design. It's not just a lump of boils.
A bad acne accident.
Okay, so this episode starts with another ridiculous thing. Valgard is choking the doctor. Kari wakes up and pulls a gun on him, but she can't get a good shot because he's holding the doctor. So she ricochets it off of something to hit him in the back.
She's also a great pool player. You know,
she knows all the angles. It's a good thing she shot him with this shot, because then she says her gun's power pack is drained.
She says that, and I'm like, don't say that out loud.
Right.
It does come back to bite her, too. Yeah. So.
He doesn't need to know that.
I always think that's weird, too. She's like, it's dead. Oh, my power pack's dead. You know, it's like, no. Because he's like, ooh, you remember, I heard you back then.
If you'd only kept your mouth shut, you would have known. Meanwhile, Ulver steals one of the bone dresses so he can do the, like, sneaking around thing. Yes, and then Tegan and Turlough finally get out of the grates. I don't quite remember what they do after that, but...
They, like, sit on some steps and, like, chat. Because remember they have that chat, I think it's in this episode, when he's like, could you kill somebody? And she's like, what the hell are you talking about? You know, like... Like, no, really, could you, like, kill somebody? And it's like, I want to kill you. I mean, like, what? I totally feel Tegan in that moment where she's like, what are you even talking about? This is not the time.
It's a weird question to just ask someone. So, Tony, Nicole, do you think you could kill someone?
I don't see why not.
Yeah, you know, if maybe Turlough, if he was bothering me enough, you know, fake redhead.
Then there's like a leper woman named Inga who fills in Nyssa on the Hydra mail and how the veneer dicks, how that all works. So she gets caught up. Then Irak learns that some of the Hydra mail vials are just filled with colored water and that the company is kind of fucking with them. Like, if some of them die, that's fine.
I mean, it's still iridescent, so they can at least see their way in the dark.
Or just have a rave.
Yeah, that's what I think. They should totally have raves.
And then Valgard comes in and tells them about the doctor and Kari because they just got these bad Hydra mail and these two people just showed up, you know, intruders. They just sort of think they're spies from the company, from the Terminus company.
Which would be great if you killed the one guy. Like, it's like, oh, they're spies. Let's kill him.
That's not going to look bad on your report.
No.
So... Valgard's like, what are we going to do about this? And Irak's pretty much noncommittal. And Valgard questions his leadership. Irak says, well, if you get the intruders, if you can get them here to me, I will step down as leader. Because I think he's like, I don't think you can actually do it or whatever. But so he's like, fine, I'll go do it. And then he leaves. And then there's this leads into an actually really funny thing. He sort of goes into like that, where that border is to the Forbidden Zone, is just standing around. While meanwhile...
You say he doesn't think he can do it, but his line actually is, oh, he hates me enough. He'll do it. Like, yeah, he hates me so much that it'll motivate him.
Right.
But because Ulver's been going around dressed up in this bone thing, he almost gets spotted at one point, and he's like, oh, I'm a guard too. Blah, 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 blah. And then there's like a whole little, like, sort of pointless scene where they're like, I talked to this guy, and I'm pretty sure he's an intruder. And then they go to check it out, Irak and other people, and then there's just a suit set up on a table. And he's like, you must have been drinking. You just thought you heard him. Here, get out of my face with this. But because Ulver is still wearing the bone thing, he goes and he bumps into Valgard, who is just sort of standing there at the border, like, contemplating going into the Forbidden Zone. And then he sees him come in, Ulver come in. He's like... I'm going.
I know, I love that part. Like, come on. It's kind of a common theme of this episode. You have, like, I'm gonna kill the doctor, come on. And then that one, like, I'm going into the Forbidden Zone. You know, it's kind of a common theme.
But I thought that scene was legitimately hilarious. Irak goes to the lepers to choose someone to go get cured, basically. And he picks Nyssa because she's the fittest. And I guess that makes it easier to cure. She's going to be the first to go to the Garm.
She won the lottery.
And she does try to do the thing where she's like, don't take me, take someone else. And he's like, that's when he says, "We, the fittest go first." Meanwhile, the doctor and Kari find a burnt, singing boar, dragon metal, just like rambling like crazy and singing. And it's great. And I think he's hilarious too. But basically, there's an engine leaking radiation, and he's just been stacking shit in front of it. And I assume it's what burnt him as well, because he went to go check out the levels of the, and it's the radiation levels, I guess.
Well, I mean, these are the same people that wear the skeletal armor that blocks them supposedly from radiation. So in their heads, I'm sure if you pile a bunch of metal on top of it, it'll stop it. You know?
That's how I fix all my problems.
Exactly. I do that all the time.
He explains that if this engine explodes, it would be the end of the universe. It would cause a chain reaction that would lead to the end of the universe, and says that there's one engine that has already exploded, and to follow the wires, and the doctor will learn more about it. But then Valgard enters and says, hey, don't be talking to these two. They're spies.
His response to this is so cute, too. He's like, oh, they are? But they seem so nice. Like, he's hurt.
And then a fight scene ensues. Valgard tries to attack the doctor, and the doctor just throws him right into the junk wall that's been blocking the radiation.
And Boar's like, my wall!
Meanwhile, the Garm just sort of shows up and is like, I don't know what's going on here. And just takes Boar. Does it? It literally like happens in the background, right?
Well, I guess he's still following his order to get Boar. But yeah, he's probably like, oh God, whatever. You know, let me just get him and go back to take a nap, you know.
So Nyssa has been tied up to wait for the Garm. And then the Garm enters, drops off Boar. Like, by the way, I got this thing. And Sigurd, is it Sigurd? Sigurd? I don't know.
Can't remember now.
One of the Vanir takes Boar away to, you know, take him to be helped. And because of that, the room's kind of empty now. It's just the Garm and Nyssa. And the Garm's coming towards Nyssa. And Ulver enters. And he's like, finally, I have an opportunity to do something. And he tries to free Nyssa. He can't get her free. And the Garm's slowly approaching. And he shoots the Garm, and it does nothing. You can't hurt that big, big wolf boy.
That big Garmy bear.
And the Garm takes Nyssa away, and Ulver follows at a distance. Boar is talking to this Sigurd guy and says that he saw the pilot of Terminus, this big complex, and that he was way dead, and that the Big Bang is going to happen again.
I mean, that pilot is more than just a little dead.
It reminded me a bit of, because we'll eventually see that pilot, yeah, and he's like super just like decayed and stuff and in like toasty. A spacesuit. It reminded me a bit of Alien and how they, you know, there's the pilot in that as well, that they, where they get the alien eggs and it's just this big dead alien dude.
That makes sense.
I wonder if it is sort of a ref, like, you know, pulled from that a little bit. They want to give Boar some Hydromel, but Irak says no, because that would be a waste, because there's only so much of it anyway, and this guy's clearly done for anyway. Just gotta firmly establish that Irak sucks.
He's so compassionate.
Oh, there's Turlough stuff in this episode. The Black Guardian punishes Turlough, just like, he's like, you've done nothing! This whole time, you've just literally done nothing.
This is where he says that thing about, you represent a poor investment of my time.
He just starts like, hurting him. Like, the thing glows and he screams, but he's like, listen, I just need to get back on the TARDIS and I will take care of stuff. Just help me get back on the TARDIS. So he's like, all right, well, remember when you were down in the grates and you saw those like controls? Go fuss with the controls and that'll help you get the door back. So they go back into the grates. I think he says something like, the key is beneath your feet.
He also doesn't say anything helpful beyond that. Turlough's like, what the fuck does that mean? And he's like, figure it out! Like, okay.
That's basically all they do for the rest, is like fuss with that. Tegan and Turlough fuss with those wires and stuff. Meanwhile, Ulver finds the Garm tying up Nyssa, and he goes to get Nyssa again, but gets attacked by Valgard. Then, following the wires Boar mentioned, the Doctor and Kari find the dead pilot. So then the Doctor sort of like looks at things and says that the engine didn't explode. It just dumped off a bunch of unstable fuel. And then it exploded. Creating the universe.
That's why it's at the exact center of the universe.
Yeah, and it shot the ship forward in time and in the process killed the pilot and damaged the second engine. If the second engine dumps the fuel or whatever, explodes, it would cause a chain reaction, undoing the Big Bang, basically destroying the universe. And the computer basically goes into a countdown to start that process of dumping the unstable fuel. So that's not good.
No.
Seems bad.
And that is the end of episode 3. And we are now into episode 4, which I have given my worst title yet.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I call it The Ganab Gib.
Wow.
It's Big Bang backwards.
Wow.
Okay.
Mine's not much better. It's from the line, the beginning of the end, boys.
Nice. I do have to say, I love this concept of this being the thing that, like, started the universe. Just this big ship in the middle of nothingness.
That yeah. ship accidentally time traveled to the beginning of the universe, right?
No. Yeah.
No, it does.
I thought it was outside of our universe.
Yeah, it says Terminus was once capable of time travel, and then it took enormous amount of energy to push a ship that size through time, and then it ends up, I think accidentally, at the center of the universe. But when he ejects the fuel, because the fuel is unstable, it's into a void, and for some reason that starts the explosion and the chain reaction. And that pushes it forward in time.
But, like, presumably the universe had to exist before the ship exists.
I don't know. I mean, he does say into a void, but who even knows? It's Doctor Who science.
I was assuming the ship was outside of this universe and then, like, created this universe.
I'm just reading the dialogue, but...
Because
if they set up that it was capable of time travel.
Right. I just think it isn't anymore. It's just that engine going out, probably.
So I assume that was set up to explain how it got back to the beginning.
Right. Though I think it's in the future now.
Right.
Yeah, that the explosion kicked it into the future.
Right.
So you're saying it time traveled back, then it created the universe and got shot forward.
Yes?
See, I was thinking it was outside of the universe. Like, these are beings from another universe that had just had this giant ship, and then, like, that was capable of time travel because of just how much energy was in it. And then it, like, dumped this fuel out, and then it created the universe and shot them forward through time. But it could be what you said.
I don't know.
I'm not sure either. But it's an interesting concept. Probably my favorite part of the serial is that whole idea of just, it created the universe and it can destroy the universe. And that's why it's at the center of the universe, because everything came out from there.
Yeah, it's a nice bookend.
I do like that idea, because you set this up and you're like, why would they put this at the center of the universe?
That's a also very specific presumes place. That everything that came out of it kind of went out evenly.
Right.
That is a good point.
Because that's not how an explosion generally works.
It's not just a perfect round ball.
Yeah, but even like an explosion has like an epicenter. And it doesn't need to be perfectly symmetrical for that to be true.
Maybe it's just like a George Lucas like Death Star explosion. And that's perfectly round.
The idea that it's there because it's the cause is like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
I wonder, before the pilot died, if he had a moment to contemplate, like, oh, crap, what did I just do? You know, it's like, oops.
Oh, I created the universe. And then he dies.
His helmet is not as cool.
It's no. not.
You need to be a pirate.
He's just got like a boring looking sort of NASA-esque thing.
That's what it looks like to me.
Maybe NASA created the universe.
Oh, maybe.
What if it was just John Crichton? Ulver fights Valgard while the Garm takes Nissa away. This definitely does sort of happen in the background. They're busy fighting and don't really see it happening. But Ulver wins the fight, and Ulver goes for a gun, but it's in front of the engine, the radiation thing. And Valgard comes to, and he's like, I wouldn't do it. Don't do that, because there's a bunch of radiation. And then he sort of just starts doing this spiel about, like, he used to work for the same commander that Ulver does, because he recognizes the, like, fighting style. He's like, I was trained the same way, but that commander betrayed him, and that's why he's working here now. He basically put him into slave labor, and that, you know, they work here, and the Hydromel keeps them working there, and that sort of thing. And he's like, so, hey, don't follow the same path I did. Maybe get out from under that guy.
Oh, man. This scene upsets me. This scene upsets me so much because I was fooled.
You were fooled.
I was fooled and I didn't care for it.
When he was all like, help me. Help me up.
Yeah. He's playing on everybody's sympathies and then they leave and then he's just like, he just gets up on his own and he's like, ha, 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 ha.
Then he uses that 10-foot pole to get the gun.
Yeah. And I was like, what? I trusted you.
Yeah, I think to be a leader of the veneer, you just need to be a jerk.
To be fair, though, he does give some helpful advice. He tells him to stop being a pirate. And he also says that the Garm is curing Nyssa, so not to worry about that. And that's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
But he does get a gun.
Okay, if the Garm works and is curing people, I know he says that it doesn't always work.
There was a bit where Ulvar said, no one escapes the Terminus. No one comes back from Terminus. Everyone dies. But that's
clearly not true. But presumably some people do. Is it just not a significant amount? Is it like the majority of people?
It's possible. You know what it probably is? It takes a while to get them there. And they're way too advanced to be cured.
Nyssa just got it. So she's like barely sick. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, so like people die on the way there.
Yeah, they get too sick to be cured. Like they're too far gone.
That makes sense.
And Nyssa says it's a bit unstable too, because that's why she wants to work on it. Because little Garmy Bear, he's doing his best, but he can only do so much.
Meanwhile, the doctor and Kari, the countdown has started, the thing that's going to dump the fuel. And it's basically, there's just this big giant lever that they can't move.
Their thing to this is because it's just slowly pushing itself down. And I think one of them's like, we'd need the strength of a giant. And they're like, oh, shit, a giant. And they run and they get the Garm, I guess.
Yeah, they're going to go look for him. Meanwhile, in the Tegan and Turlo plot, they get the door appearing for a little bit. And then they find out that the ship is about to, because they're not on the Terminus complex. They're still in the leper ship. That the ship's about to undock from it. And they're like, oh, we can't do that because the doctor and Nyssa are on it. Can't leave without them. Tegan runs off and's like yelling at the control panel, like, stop! And she's pushing buttons and trying everything and it doesn't work. And then she does, you know, the thing she learned from the doctor. She just smashes her fist into it and then it stops.
I mean, that's how you fix the TARDIS. So, I mean, it makes sense.
And she's like, I can't believe that worked. And while she was doing all this, Turlo managed to get the door to appear and he gets onto the TARDIS. I believe the Black Guardian just is like, again, like, you've not done anything, and like punishes him again. And the crystal glows and he yells again. Like, it does it in a way where you're like, maybe he died.
Oh, God.
That would be interesting. Well, you know, Turlo is just so passive. So he's like, well, I mean, I left him on the ship and the ship's about to explode. So, like, he totally died. And it's like, dude, that's not killing him. Like, poor Black Guardian. I mean, he's got a dead bird on his head. He has to deal with Turlo. It's just, I kind of feel for him. I would be that grouchy, too.
Ulvar finds the Garm, yells at him a bit. And I think this might be the first time the Garm actually talks. He's like, why are you doing this? Why are you taking people and all that? And he's like, hey, I'm fixing this disease. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But like, at least this way, some die instead of everyone dying. So back off. And he's like, but I'll take you to Nyssa. So he takes him to where Nyssa is, leads them there. But then I think he also has to divert and go to the doctor and Kari because they steal that box and call him with it. Because there's a box that's like a little...
It's a dog whistle.
Yeah. It's a dog whistle. But Ulvar finds the room Nyssa is in, and he, like, is trying to break into it. He gets in there, and Nyssa just straight up attacks him.
She straddles him. He looks very happy.
She sure does.
I mean, we've just gotten the upshot, you know, the upskirt shot, and then there's that. I'm like, oh my God, come on, Doctor Who.
This is her final episode, and they are doing some things.
I mean, he looks very happy when she's on top of him.
And a little terrified.
Well, yeah.
It's a little bit of both.
That could go together for some people.
For sure. So, but then Nyssa tells him, like, the cure sort of works, but with more study and work, it could hella work.
It could hella work. That is the precise bit of dialogue, yeah.
I thought that's what she said.
So, Iriagnosis, the Garm signal box is missing because the doctor took it, and he's very unhappy about that. There's, like, a very long, tense scene of the Garm trying to push the lever, and he's not quite doing it, but then he gives a little extra oomph, and it the universe is fine now. Yep. Yay!
Fixed it. And then this episode isn't over.
It's not.
It feels like it should be, but it's not.
The doctor thanks the Garm, and the Garm's like, if you really want to thank me, destroy that signal box and set me free. And so the doctor does.
I thought the doctor's just kind of like, oh, okay.
This is the real, like, the ending of Aladdin. He just frees the genie.
And I love the way he just drops it. Like, he doesn't even, like, throw it to the ground really hard or whatever. He just kind of like, oh, boop. You know, it's just like, oh, because I thought it would be funny if he dropped it and it didn't do anything and like he had to step on it or something, but no, he just drops it.
It's like not dramatic at all. He's like, okay, well, sure. And I'll just sort of toss it to the floor. You're free now, I guess. Like, it's not.
I mean, the Garm could have done that. He could have just knocked it off of the table or something.
So the doctor and Kari are like, well, it's stopped, but we need to still work on the computer to make sure that it doesn't ever happen. But while they're working on it, Valgard shows up and pulls the gun on him, the one that he got from in front of with his pole. And he's like, argh! And Ulver comes in, kicks the gun out of his hand. Kari picks it up and then yells, freeze!
Yeah.
Yeah, that does happen.
Anytime that the pirates yell, it's just hilariously good. So Nyssa says that with the Garm's help, they could probably turn this place into a real hospital. He could help sort of figure out how to make this cure actually work. But Valgard argues that the company has the Hydromel and like they control too much stuff. And they would take the Hydromel away from him and all that stuff. And they would die. So it wouldn't be worth doing. But Nyssa's like, I can probably take care of that.
Yeah, I could make you some. I make drugs in my bedroom all the time. I mean,
at least for this episode.
At least, yeah.
So they all go back to where the veneer is. Bor has a great scene where he says, am I dead yet? I think there's also like a little mini subplot where the guy watching him goes and steals some Hydromel for him because Irak wouldn't give him any. So Valgard brings everyone in and says that they can save the day. And then someone's like, do you believe that? And he says, do you know anyone harder to convince?
Which is a great line.
That is a very good line. The doctor goes where they store the Hydromel, shoots the box with a gun, and then does the whoo thing.
This is the second time he's done that.
Second time he's done that.
Incredibly goofy to do with a laser gun. I can't imagine that there's, like, smoke.
Yeah, and you might accidentally shoot your face, so.
It's fine. He can regenerate. They can rebuild him.
It's like, oh, look, it's Colin Baker.
So Nyssa studies the Hydromel and says, I can totally reproduce this. So there's no reason that we have to be stuck in this terrible system. Let's break out of these chains.
I like that the solution is like, what if we could just print our own money?
Right.
Then we wouldn't need to sell our labor.
Meanwhile, Kari and Ulver go out and shoot the wires connected to the computer to make sure that doesn't do a thing. We're just tying up like loose ends here at the end. It takes a while, to be honest.
It's because there's so much stuff in this serial that isn't integrated with the other stuff that is also in the serial.
Irak shows up and Valgard's like, look, I got the intruders. Remember that bet we made?
Yep, I'm the leader now.
And Irak's like, and then sort of everybody just sort of like bands up together.
You said.
I feel like it should have been like the end of Scooby-Doo when they're all like, oh, ha, 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 ha. They all just laugh together and he's like, Irak's frowning like,
I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for that Garmy bear. And then Tegan finally joins the plot and fills in the doctor about Turlo, that he sort of just disappeared, I guess. The doctor gets like temporarily like real grumpy with Tegan, and Nyssa is like, doctor, tell her you missed her.
Yeah, I love that part.
Be nice to Tegan.
Yeah, he says, what is it, like, doctor, say you're pleased to see her.
He's mad at her for leaving, right?
He said, don't go anywhere, you know, and of course she did, because she's a Doctor Who companion.
And then he's sort of like, and then goes and talks to Valgard to give him some leadership advice, because the doctor's qualified for that.
He is the president. Oh, wait, no. Not yet.
And then, well, Tegan says, doctor, come here. You need to, Tegan, or Nyssa has something to say. Because Nyssa and Tegan are sort of talking in the background. And like, Tegan seems clearly upset. And then Nyssa says that she wants to stay and help. It's very sad. Tegan says she'll die here. And Nissa says, "Not easily, Tegan. Like you, I'm indestructible."
It's so sweet. It's so cute.
This is definitely one of my favorite goodbyes, because I love her, because she's like, "No, I can help here. Let me do this." And then the doctor, I like that he sort of turns away. He's like, "Oh, I'm feeling feelings. I can't feel feelings." Kind of like when Adric died. He's just like, "Ah, I don't know how to feel." But yeah, I love their goodbye. It's so sweet.
Yeah, their goodbye is very good. I don't know if I particularly
buy the motivation for staying.
Yeah. But I do like their actual goodbye. It reminded me a bit of when Steven left, in the same sort of way where he's like, "Oh, by the way, I think I might stay here and help."
Yeah.
And you're like, "What? Okay."
I will say, because they've done this, they do this to companions a lot, where companions are like, "I've decided to stay here." I don't think they've earned it once. I don't think it's been like a satisfying goodbye even one time.
I mean, it could be worse. She could be like, "I'm staying because I want to marry Valgard." And you're like, "What? Where did that come from?" Because that's another thing that happens, you know?
What if she was like, "I want to stay because I want him. I'm in love with the Garm."
Yes.
Or, it could be worse. She could just not be in the next one and just be like, "Oh, she wrote us a note that said she hates us forever and goodbye."
She's under a grate somewhere. We just don't know where she is. We accidentally left her there.
I feel like it's not that hard to, like, set up a scenario where, I mean, I guess a lot of times these decisions aren't being made at the same time that, like, an episode is being written. I assume that that's the case of why it's always so unsatisfying. That's like, "We had the cereal. Oh, and also, just FYI, this person didn't renew their contract, so write that in somewhere."
That is not the case with this one.
Are you telling me? Okay.
Yeah, it took her by surprise, Sarah Sutton.
Oh,
she did
no.
not want to leave.
Really?
Yeah.
Really.
Oh, that's sad.
She was getting replaced by Turlough.
That is just like insult to injury, too.
And this is the last serial with three companions till
okay,
now.
But so like they wrote that with this in mind. So I feel like in that case, it is not that hard to like set up. Like you have four whole episodes.
To beef up her role a little bit?
Yeah, to like show her getting emotionally involved, to maybe like relate, like to relate it to, I mean, you know.
She did science in her room at
the
beginning.
That's the thing. That's not enough. It's not enough to be like, she's very science and she wants to use science to help people. And one line at the beginning of episode one, spend some time on that.
Yeah, she was mostly a damsel throughout the entire story.
There aren't a lot of very good companion send-offs, and it drives me nuts, because why? Why are we as a show so bad at this particular thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I like that she's gonna use her intelligence to help. I mean, yes, it wasn't set up very well, but it's definitely better than, "You need to die, so you're gone," or, you know, just something weird. Or the marriage thing that seems to come up a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely something that, like, makes sense for her character. There are definitely worse companion send-offs. And they do at least get, a very sweet goodbye.
She legitimately seems upset when she's telling Tegan goodbye, too. And
she
it's
does.
Like, "Oh, no."
Yeah, they're both crying. It's just like, oh.
All I'm asking for is, like, a little bit of setup, a little bit of time spent making it more satisfying, spent making it feel more like a true character choice, instead of like, "And then we wrote this character out." Okay.
Yeah, she could have been like trying to make Hydromel the whole time or something. Like,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's definitely two things in this episode that feel like they were just sort of shoved in, and that's one of them. And just the whole plot with Turlough, really. Feels like it was like he
was
wants to kill
the
doctor.
The script later, yeah.
Yeah, like he wants to kill the doctor. Well, what did I do? I don't. I'm just gonna shove him in a thing for like the whole episode because I don't know. He can't be going around trying to kill the doctor while I'm doing this whole other plot.
I've already got a whole thing going on, and it's already chock-a-block full of bullshit.
Yes. And poor, like, Valentine Dial or whatever, the Black Guardian guy. He's probably just, like, his only lines were all like, "Do it! No, you have to do it! Do it! No, do it! Do it!" I mean, that would be a weird day recording.
That's literally the next scene is Turlough wakes up and the Black Guardian just says, "Kill the doctor!" And
I
that's the
really
end of the episode.
I really fucking mean it this time!
He literally says, do it this time. If you don't, I will, like, kill you or whatever. He's like, if you don't do it, you will be punished. This is the last time I'll say this. And it's not the first time that he said, this is the last time I'll say this.
So ineffective.
Yeah. They're not a good team.
It's so repetitive, too. It's literally every scene with them. It's like, kill the doctor. I'm trying. Kill the doctor. Kill the doctor. Okay, but it's like over and over and over again. But that is the end of episode 4. That is the end of the serial.
That's Terminus.
So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back for final thoughts.
Okay.
My name is Quoth. I tread paths by moonlight that others fear to speak of during the day. I've talked to gods, loved women, and written songs that make the minstrels weep. You may have heard of me. Join Mandy and her friends as they explore Patrick Rothfuss's best-selling fantasy series, The Kingkiller Chronicle. You can find us at casterquest.com or on the ESO Network.
And we're back! Tony, do you know what time it is?
I believe, right now, It is time.
Yes.
For final thoughts.
Whoa! Like, I feel... weird that you didn't do your bit.
Do you feel unsatisfied?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Final thoughts.
Well, I already said the big thing that I wanted to say, which is that I didn't feel like it was a very satisfying companion send-off. Which isn't to say that I think that it's bad. Like I said, they have like a very heartfelt goodbye. But also, this serial feels like it has a lot of ideas in it. A lot of stuff in it. Maybe too much stuff. Like, at a certain point, I had a kind of like a hard time keeping track of parts. You have the company, and you have like the idea that these people are slaves who like get paid in drugs that keep them alive. You have the creature that is like also being kept there to cure people, and then you have all of the lepers who are there, and you have the pirates. That's a lot of characters going on. That's a lot of like completely different players with like different functions and different parts of the story. And I feel like it could have been simplified, or if not simplified, integrated better. Like, all of these ideas should be working together. And I think it seems like they almost are, right? Like, there's definitely like a theme in there of, like you said, being stuck in a situation. And like, that is kind of like the solution is like, if you guys want to fix this, just fix it. If we get rid of your reliance on all of these things, then you can just create something better. But for some reason in the execution, it all feels kind of disjointed. Like, it feels like it's hard to keep track of all these different parts. Like, that robot is cute, but I remember when it showed up, I was like, it's just one other thing. Like, why wasn't the robot the Garm always?
Well, the Garm's in a different thing, but yeah.
Like, it just could be, there could be fewer ideas or more ideas working together. And that was kind of my issue with this one. I mean, I enjoyed it. I think maybe this is one that, like, I would come back to and watch again and see if my response to it changes. Maybe I was just like, sometimes when I'm watching stuff, I'm like not, I'm different levels of engagement. It's something that, like, requires too much attention on a day when I'm not, when I don't have that much attention. Oh yeah, on another day I might have a different reaction to this serial, I don't know. I like all the ideas in it, I just don't feel like they work well together always. I feel like I had more to say, but I don't remember it. So those are my final thoughts.
Nicole, what are your final thoughts?
I think I agree definitely a lot that it is a little bit overstuffed with concepts. I mean, it does have really good concepts, and I think it's definitely grown on me over the years as a story, and I think that's because it lends itself to a bit of rewatchability. You can kind of pick your focus when you're rewatching it. You can, like, maybe, like, I know that the robot's not really important, so I'm not really going to focus on that. Whereas, like, when you're first watching it, you're trying to take in all the bits and pieces, especially if you're in a reviewing brain where you're like, oh, I need to catch all the things. But, like, if you're just watching it, you can, you know which parts aren't important and just focus on different stuff. And I love a lot of the concepts. Like, I'm a big mythology geek, so I like the Norse stuff. And I like the stuff we were talking about with kind of the class structure and the stuff about like that they're slaves and they're all in these terrible positions and they just need someone to come in and kind of shake up the system, which I love when Doctor Who does that, by the way. But it's weird. On the one hand, it's kind of a boring episode or story. And then on the other hand, it's kind of interesting. And it's, I think a lot of that is the pacing. I think had they cut some stuff, or, I mean, maybe as a novel, it might work better. I'm not really sure. But it just feels like it's overstuffed, but slow at the same time. And that's a very weird dichotomy. It just, I just don't really know how they do that, but they manage it. So, yeah, I don't know. But I love the Garmy Bear, and I'm here for Garmy Bear.
I do think the reason why it feels like that way, both like overstuffed and slow, is because it's overstuffed with concepts. It's overstuffed with ideas, but not necessarily like plot or action.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's all very cerebral, so, but that's not something you can see on the screen. You have to like catch it, which, I mean, if you're like an 8-year-old kid watching this, you're probably like, what even? Though they're probably like, ooh, Garmy Bear, you know, so it's hard.
I mostly agree. I do enjoy a lot of this. I like the atmosphere a bit. I do feel like some of the acting and choreography fails it a little bit because there's like definitely some slow shoving of chins. I feel like some of the execution's a little wobbly, but like I do like the mood and the tone. I love the like design of everything. Even though the armor is very loud, I like the way it looks. There probably was a way to tighten this up a bit. When you said that, my brain just automatically tried to start fixing things. So I'm just going to say that real quick because I think this would have made it maybe a slightly tighter episode. Would be skip the ship.
The shuttle between the two.
The shuttle, yeah. Absolutely. Just go straight to Terminus. Instead of having Nyssa get sick, have Tegan get sick. And have Nyssa trying to cure, to help Tegan.
Which starts her on...
She does help cure Tegan. And then she's like, I want to help everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know where that leaves Turlo, but...
He could just be stuck on the TARDIS.
Yeah, if you're fixing the script, he's not in it.
That's true.
He got jettisoned into space. It was awkward.
But you could still do, I think, pretty much everything else and not...
Yeah, completely cut all. Like, the Black Guardian's not in it.
You could maybe even, as much as I enjoy them, you could probably cut out the pirates as well, but... Oh, God, I love their design so much.
I know.
They're so wonderfully 80s. But you could maybe just change them to being new lepers or something. Or they are infiltrating the place trying to shut it down sort of thing. Because they know bad stuff's going on there. Because it's never really like, what's their deal exactly? What were they trying to steal?
Yeah, they were there to steal the cargo. And then it turns out the cargo was people. And their reason for being there is thin.
Was it just that the pirates abandoned them there? Because they did abandon.
Maybe they were just annoying.
Yeah, maybe they were just done with them. It was like a breakup. They're just like, here, you could just totally go on the ship. And then they're like, whoop, bye, see you later.
They did apparently like abandon Valgard to Terminus before, so.
Well, I think Valgard was kind of let go because he just wasn't as fun as the other two, like, pirates. I feel like for the pirates, you have to be kind of like, have a great costume and look good. Like, can you imagine Valgard in that costume? I mean, it just doesn't work.
He just doesn't have enough hair.
That's why they sold him into slavery.
Yeah, they're like, dude, you are way too morose. You need to be in a skeleton armor, not in like the really awesome white costume that we have. And go-go boots.
So good. Such a good costume. But yeah, I like this serial. I don't think I love it, but I really like it. And I just, the world building itself, I think is fun. That's mostly what I enjoyed about it, was just like, I liked all the concepts, but the execution was a little wobbly. But it's definitely not the worst this season.
No.
So that's it. That's Terminus.
We did it.
Yay.
Woo! Before we go, Nicole, is there anything you'd like to plug?
Well, I can plug my podcast.
What's your podcast called?
Weirdly enough, it's called Terminus, because I was like watching this the other day and I was like, oh my God, I should call my episode or my podcast Terminus. Yeah. No, it's called the Terminus Doctor Who Podcast. It's at terminus.libsyn.com. I'm still working on getting some episodes out just with the pandemic. I've just had other focuses.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's just a podcast about classic Who and modern Who and random stuff. So because I'm a big old geek. So, yeah. So, yeah, just find me over there. It's probably the easiest place.
Unseen World? I don't know. Watch it. My brain just went completely blank.
Unseen World. See it.
See it. Please. You can find it at the Heartland channel on the Roku. You can find it at watchheartlandtv.com. And you can watch it on air, over the air on the Heartland Network. If you get that.
It's going into syndication soon,
it's
too.
It's going into syndication.
Ooh.
So there's a chance that you your local station might have picked it up. I don't have the details about that. I just know that stations did supposedly do that, which is crazy. I was told 79 different stations picked it up.
Mm, wow.
Nice.
Wild. So yeah, check with your local station. You could, like, ask if you wanted to, and then later they'll be like, I don't know, we should look into that, and then they'll pick it up too, and then it'll be great, and everyone will be happy. We've gotten a couple of messages from listeners who have, like, gone on and, like, watched The Unseen World and, like, send me their thoughts and stuff, and that has been very cool.
I think Bill Lemon may have watched the whole series.
All 13 episodes, which is crazy. I was like, thank you for that, because it's weird to make something for TV and, like, put a lot of work into it and then, like, put it on air and then, like, not know if people are watching it. Like, when we make the podcast, we don't have, like, a huge listenership or anything, but y'all are great and, like, very engaging. And even if we don't get a lot of downloads, we get a lot of people reaching out to us on Twitter and on YouTube and wherever, which is very cool. So it's great, and I love it, and I don't really get that with The Unseen World so much, because it's just a different medium. That's not how it works. I'm kind of hoping maybe we'll get more feedback, you know, it starts airing in all these different stations. But if you have watched it, if you've reached out to let me know, thank you very much. It's great to hear back from people who have watched a thing that I've made. It makes me want to keep making them, which I need the encouragement to do some days.
I'll just once again say real quick, buy Road Trippy, the novel I co-wrote with Christine Cherry and Ray Friesen. It's on Amazon. Just search Road Trippy, look in the books, it's in there. JB Hive Mind.
Please follow me on Twitter. I'm trying to get more followers on Twitter because no one follows me. I'm Forward Power. That's FWDPWR. I don't know what I tweet about. I tweet about roller derby and Unseen World and...
You have food opinions.
If you listen to this podcast, you probably follow our podcast Twitter. Well,
watch
follow me
your
too.
Rest. Yeah. Well, if you liked this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on watchyourrasslon.com. And if you'd like to help us out, you can become a Patreon patron at patreon.com/watchathon. Which, speaking of, special thanks to our newest Patreon patron, Stephen G. Evans. Thanks Woo! For becoming a patron. You are awesome. And you can also find our Amazon wish list at watchyourassline.com/support. And you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing a DVD or Blu-ray for us. We'll mention you on the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden.
You can check him out at Matthew Golden. .net. And I also want to give a special shout out to Vincent EL for providing us with our amazing theme song.
Thanks, Vince.
You can check out their music at soundcloud.com/VincentEL or VincentEL.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we talk about enlightenment. The concept, not the episode. We're no longer a Doctor Who podcast. Yeah. We're just about personal fulfillment.
That's a nice change of pace, to be honest.
So if you want to figure out what you're doing with your life, tune in next week. We'll let you know.
We'll tell you.
Until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Garmy bears are awesome.
Garmy bears, bouncing here and there and everywhere.
Shit!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.